And the court will proceed to the fifth case, Bienanzek versus Gonzalez. Ms. Baldini-Poterman? Did I come close on that?
You came close, Your Honor. Thank you.
You didn't tell me if I got a cigar, though.
Very close. You got the cigar. May it please the court. My name is Maria Baldini-Poterman, and I represent Peter Pinacek in this matter before the court today. The issues before this court come down to whether the immigration judge violated Mr. Pinacek's statutory and due process rights to present evidence on his own behalf by denying the motion for continuance. Secondly, it comes down to whether or not the Department of Homeland Security met its burden of proof as defined by the Immigration and Nationality Act to prove by clear, convincing, and unequivocal evidence that he was indeed deportable. And part of that challenge comes down to whether or not the Attorney General guidelines were in fact in effect. When the briefs were initially filed, the government took the position that the AG guidelines were not in fact in effect and that the immigration judge had properly considered the issue, as had the board. Last Thursday, the government filed a motion to remand and basically conceded that the AG guidelines were in effect and that the IJ had erred, as well as the board. So this puts the case in a little bit of a different procedural posture than what was originally briefed. Then finally, the issue comes down to whether or not the IJ erred by not considering the evidence that was before him regarding whether or not Mr. Pinacek actually paid a bribe to Officer Robinson. With respect to whether or not Mr. Pinacek's statutory and constitutional rights to present evidence were violated, this court has laid out a two-part test. In order to have a meaningful opportunity to be heard, the immigration judge should have allowed Mr. Pinacek a continuance to obtain a copy of his government file. In the form I-213, which the government had provided to the immigration court, the government alleged that he paid a $5,000 bribe to an INS officer, and that as part of the undercover operations, the conversations were recorded and videotaped. In a very perfunctory hearing before the immigration court on February 24, 2004, the government attorney represented to the immigration judge that Mr. Pinacek had been, quote, picked up as part of a government sting operation known as Operation Durango. It did not, however, attempt to call any of the officers who were allegedly present at that time, including Officer Robinson. Mr. Pinacek had submitted a sworn affidavit to the immigration court, which basically laid out that he believed he legally had obtained his lawful permanent residence and that he had actually paid the consultant who he had obtained the services of through a law firm in the area. So as far as Mr. Pinacek was concerned, he did not pay a bribe to an officer, and this fact was never resolved conclusively by the immigration judge. In the immigration judge's decision, he does not even address Mr. Pinacek's affidavit with respect to what actually happened that day at the interview with the INS officer. By denying the motion for continuance, the immigration court denied Mr. Pinacek his right to obtain a copy of his file and to present any evidence that would have been available. As this court may be aware, there is no formal discovery process in immigration proceedings. The only way for a respondent or an alien to obtain information in their defense from the government is to file a Freedom of Information Act. Reviewing the timeline of this case, the Immigration Service apparently conducted an interview with Mr. Pinacek on July 21st of 1999. Mr. Pinacek was given a legitimate stamp in his passport. He then applied for a Social Security card, which was granted. And it was not, in fact, until October 16th of 2003, more than 4 years later, that the service moved to put him in proceedings. Until that point, he had no knowledge that the stamp in his card was not, in fact, a legitimate stamp and that he had not, in fact, been granted permanent residency. He had his first master calendar hearing on December 4th of 2003. It was continued for him to obtain the services of an attorney. He had a second hearing at the beginning of February, and he was represented, and his attorney asked for a brief continuance, which was granted until February 24th of 2004. His attorney filed a Freedom of Information Act request. it was not unreasonable for Mr. Pinacek to seek a continuance, having just recently retained the services of an attorney, to attempt to get a copy of his file from the service. It was also reasonable for him to believe that there would be exculpatory evidence contained in his file to prove that he, in fact, did not commit a bribery offense. But rather, in the judge's decision, by finding that he did not deserve voluntary departure, the immigration judge found that he had committed an offense of bribery and that he had paid a bribe to a government officer without considering the affidavit that Mr. Pinacek provided regarding the events and without the service providing any evidence regarding what actually happened, evidence that the service itself, by the form I-213, concedes that it had in its possession. Mr. Pinacek was entitled to bring forth that evidence to defend himself on his own behalf. So clearly the immigration judge abused his discretion in denying the motion for continuance. The immigration judge also abused his discretion and committed a clear error of law as now conceded by the government in that the AG guidelines did in fact bind the immigration service at the time the operation was conducted and still in fact today do bind the Department of Homeland Security. Additionally, as far as the whether or not Officer Robinson should have rejected the application at the time of the interview, the regulations and the operating instructions of the former INS, which now do bind the Department of Homeland Security, clearly lay out that if an application is deemed to be filed in person and it is not complete, i.e., it does not have a fee, it's not properly signed, and most importantly, that a visa petition has been approved, then the application is supposed to be rejected. Mr. Pinacek's affidavit states that he brought the application fee money to the interview. The application money was provided at the time of the interview. Because there was no visa petition number available and no visa petition actually been approved, the application should have been rejected. By rejecting the application, the government would not have had information provided in order to be able to sufficiently put Mr. Pinacek in removal proceedings. Therefore, the immigration judge also erred as a matter of law by refusing to grant Mr. Pinacek's motion to terminate, and the government provided no other evidence, again, in support of its allegations that the information was legally obtained.
Perhaps you could clear this up for me, counsel. The petitioner feels he had the grounds for lawful permanent resident status. Is that correct?
Yes. He believed that he had actually been granted permanent residency based on a petitioning sponsoring employer.
And when did that occur, that petition is sponsoring?
He believed that the firm that he had obtained services through had taken the steps to file the proper paperwork in 1998.
But when did that occur?
The events where he went and he worked with Mr. Shanovitz?
Yeah, but we're talking, aren't we over 5 years after the expiration of the visa?
After the expiration of his entry.
He entered the country in September of 1997 on a tourist visa.
Yes, Your Honor. So it occurred about a year or so later. The issue of why he's actually...
Perhaps I'm mistaken here, but... His notice to appear was filed by the department on November 10th, 2003?
Yes, Your Honor. Until that time, he had no idea that he was not a lawful permanent resident.
He did not understand the circumstances about his six-month limitation when entering the country?
He did understand the circumstances of that, Your Honor. But, however, if we go back to the time period of 1997 through April 30th of 2001, there's a section of law that's under 8 U.S.C. 1255I, which is known in common lands terms as 245I, which allowed an alien who had overstayed their visa to adjust their status within the United States mm-hmm. if a visa petition was properly filed prior to April 30th of 2001. So if in 1999, at the time of the interview, Officer Robinson had rejected his application or the service had placed him in proceedings before April 30th of 2001, he could have gone to a different law firm, obtain services to properly get the sponsoring employer's petition on file, which would have grandfathered him in to be able to then apply legitimately for an I-485 adjustment of status application. By the fact that the service sat on this until 4.5 years later, at this point, he is no longer eligible for adjustment of status under Section 8 U.S.C. 1255I. So in that sense, he has been prejudiced.
Want to save a few moments for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. I would like to save 2 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Paisner?
May it please the Court, my name is Jennifer Paisner on behalf of the respondent, Alberto Gonzalez. I'd like to begin by clarifying the basis for the motion to remand, which we filed last week. I think there may be, when we wrote the brief, we stand by all the arguments that we made in the brief. However, in preparing for oral argument, it was determined that the Attorney General guidelines at issue apply to the Department of Homeland Security. That does not mean that they're legally enforceable in a court of law. However, due to new remand policies in our office, it was determined that because the immigration judge made an error in his statement that the Attorney General guidelines do not apply, and he never reached the issue of whether they're legally enforceable or not, which is a separate issue, that the case should go back to the board in light of that error to not to simply determine whether or not they apply, but to assume that they apply, and then to make any further necessary findings, such as whether they're legally enforceable.
So is it your position, excuse me, not your position, but the government's position that we're going to be favored with a, if there's a remand, a BIA interpretation of the Attorney General's guidelines? Their position, what they should be, how they should be considered by the IJ, and what's going to happen if we were to remand this? What would you expect the BIA? I don't know. Ask you to predict it. What procedurally do you see?
Well,
the BIA doing?
When a case gets remanded, it gets remanded along with our motion, so that the
right.
BIA knows what error we
right.
thought warranted remand. What we say is that when the immigration judge said that the Attorney General guidelines no longer apply because DHS is no longer under the Attorney General, that that's incorrect. That, to the best of my knowledge, and that unless they've been specifically repealed or replaced with new guidelines, that the guidelines that govern the former INS continue to govern DHS's operations. Given that fact, what effect do they have? Do they have any effect at all?
And that's the question you want answered by the BIA?
Yes, it is. I mean, we argued in our brief back in November that they're not legally enforceable in this court. We believe that's still a legally defensible.
Your position is basically they're the same as the manual for U.S. attorneys, I assume, right?
Yes. But our position is that we'd prefer to have the administrative agency say that in the first instance, especially in light of our new remand policies and in light of this clear misstatement by the immigration judge, which formed a basis for his decision.
If the Attorney General took the position wondering why that position couldn't just be advanced by the government now.
Well, it could. I mean, and if the court decides to deny the motion to remand, I mean, we stand by all the arguments we made in our brief. More as a matter of discretion, we are now more sensitive to clear errors made in an immigration judge's decision. And in light of these new remand guidelines, which have just been promulgated in the past month or so,
I appreciate the increased sensitivity in this area.
So that's the basis of the motion to remand. If the court would like, I can then go into the merits of
perhaps you should
of our position. I think it's important to clarify at the outset that Mr. Pinacek was never charged as removable on the basis of any kind of fraudulent behavior. The notice to appear alleged removability simply as a visa overstay. And he has never actually denied the allegations contained in the notice to appear, simply that he came in on this visa, he overstayed the terms of the visa. That's it. What he claims is that the government should not be able to rely upon that evidence because it was obtained unlawfully. And there are two components to his argument. The first is that during his hearing, the immigration judge should have granted a continuance pending the results of his FOIA request. And he states in his request for a continuance that the only purpose of the FOIA request was to obtain evidence to show that this undercover operation was conducted in violation of these attorney general guidelines that are at issue. He doesn't say in his request for a continuance that he was seeking to obtain evidence that would show that he was somehow innocent of the fraud charges. He just wanted to show that the undercover operation violated the guidelines. And the law is clear that these guidelines are not legally, we concede they apply, but they're not legally enforceable in a court of law. And that position has been upheld in numerous circuits. The cases are cited in our brief, the 11th Circuit, even this circuit. I don't believe it's addressed them specifically in the context of immigration proceeding, but it's held in other contexts that internal operating procedures and guidelines of an agency do not create any legally enforceable rights. And if the court looks at the statement at the end of the Attorney General guidelines, they specifically state, these guidelines on the use of undercover operations are set forth solely for the purpose of internal Department of Justice guidance. They are not intended to, do not, and may not be relied upon to create any rights, substantive or procedural, enforceable at law by any party in any matter, civil or criminal, and they do not place any limitations on otherwise lawful investigative or litigative prerogatives of the Department of Justice. So our position is that these guidelines are not enforceable. Therefore,
But they might be under, on a remand, something the BIA could look to in considering whether it ought to go back to the IJ because of the circumstances of this case. You know, is that where we're headed here?
Well, I mean, our position is always that they're not legally enforceable.
No, I appreciate that.
I don't know what the board would do. I mean, in our mind, the purpose of remand is because the immigration judge and the board never reached this point. I mean, all the immigration judge said was that they're not, they don't apply, and they do apply. But the second step is that even if they do apply, but they're not legally enforceable. So no purpose would have been served by granting the continuance. And therefore, the immigration judge did not abuse his discretion in denying it. We also have a separate argument that the court lacks jurisdiction over the denial of the continuance, which is set forth in the brief. Finally, I'd like to briefly discuss the denial of the motion to terminate and the argument that that the undercover operation violated regulations. And regulations, unlike the guidelines, are legally enforceable. However, Mr. Pinacek's argument is foreclosed by this court's prior decision. There's no indication in the record at all that when he submitted this application for adjustment of status, that he submitted it along with either an immediate relative petition or a preference petition. And in Lopez Chavez, this court held that under this regulation, there's only one condition for which the obligation return was clear, namely submitting an application simultaneously with an immediate relative petition or a preference petition. In that part of the Lopez-Chavez decision, the court did not distinguish between applications submitted by mail and applications submitted in person. The court then went on to state that, in fact, the INS had acted in accordance with an internal operating procedure stating that if an application was submitted by mail, it should not be returned. Mr. Pinacek points to an internal operating procedure saying that if an application is submitted by hand, it should be returned. But again, internal operating procedures are not legally enforceable. So the only thing he can rely upon is this regulation, which the court has already recognized, not distinguishing between applications submitted by mail or in person, that the obligation to return it is clear only in one condition, and he did not meet that condition. Thus, the immigration judge did not err in denying the motion to terminate. Finally, what the court is left with is the notice to appear and the form I-213, which clearly support the immigration judge's finding that the government met its burden of proving by clear and convincing evidence only that Mr. Pinacek is removable as a visa overstay. And to the extent the immigration judge at the very end of his decision denied voluntary departure as a matter of discretion, that is clearly not reviewable by the court, and that's never been raised as an issue by the petitioner before the court. If the court has no further questions, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Paisley. Half a minute. We'll make that a full minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. 2 points on this to rebuttal. First is that Mr. Pinacek filed his motion for continuance on February 19th, 2004. The master calendar hearing at which he was served with the I-213 occurred on February 24th, 2004. So it is not possible that he could have included a motion for continuance on the grounds of trying to challenge a fraud allegation because he had not even been served with it at the time. He did, however, raise and contest it at the time. As far as the Lopez-Chavez case goes, the Lopez-Chavez case clearly dealt with a petition that had been mailed in, not that one that was filed in person. And the Department of Homeland Security, or the INS at the time, did violate its own internal policies in not rejecting it at the time it was filed. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.